Okay, today is Monday, May 24th, or 20th day of the month of Iyar. This is the Gemara Shir. We're up to Masechah Sukkah, Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph. Okay, Rabotai. We're on Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph. The Mishnah. This relatively simple Mishnah has three different halachos that have to be analyzed, and tonight we'll focus on one of them, number three. Now, says the Mishnah, Mikabeles isha miyad bina umiyad ba'ala umachziraso lemayim b'shabbos. The Mishnah says that on Shabbos, first day of Yom Tov, when it was still the practice to take lulav on Shabbos, after her husband finishes it, so he might come home and ask his wife to please put it in the flower pot to keep it fresh. So the wife is permitted to take it, put it into the water, or her son put it into the water, his son put it into the water on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'Shabbos machzirin, on Shabbos, the first day of Yom Tov that comes out on Shabbos, you can return the lulav to its original water where it was sitting before Yom Tov, but you're not permitted to put fresh water in on Shabbos. B'Yom Tov mosifin, on Yom Tov you're allowed to add a little fresh water. U'b'moed on Chol HaMoed machlifin, you change the waters completely. In order to keep the lulav fresh, the hadassim of the arav was fresh, on chol hamoed you should switch the water. So the Mishnah was apparently not a fan of wrapping it up in newspapers and towels and things alike. But keeping it in water in a flower pot with water, like you do flowers when you give your wife flowers, that's what you do. You put them in a vase, and that's what the Mishnah recommends. And then the Mishnah says, "Katan hayodeya lina'aneya chayav balulav." A minor, a child who knows how to make the nanuim, is chayav in lulav. That's the sugya of chinuch, which we will not even get close to touching tonight. So we're going to see focus on the first item of the Mishnah tonight: mikabeles isha miyad vina. Now, and she puts it into the vase, into the flower pot. Why can't the guy do it himself? Does he have to hand it off? This is a handoff play. Has to hand it off to his wife? Why can't he? What's the big chiddush? If you can do it, your wife can do it. What? No, I'm talking about the wife. The son is a katan or a gadol. We don't know. But the question which the Gemara will ask is, what's the business of the woman here? Who cares who puts it into the water pot? So take a look at the Gemara for two lines, and that'll be our point of discussion. Ask Mar Pshita. Well, of course the woman can put it in. The guy can put it in too. So what do you have to go through this whole statement? If you wanted to let us know that you're allowed to put the water, the lulav, into the flower pot, into the vase on Shabbos, you can say that. You don't have to introduce a woman. You can just say, Machzir ish es lulavo lemayim b'Shabbos. You're allowed to put your lulav back into the water on Shabbos. I might have thought that you can't for some reason. But so the Mishnah can just say, just go ahead and put. So what do you need? If a man can do it, a woman can do it. Says the Gemara. Mahu desema. I could have imagined. Ho will v'isha lav baschiyuva hu. He. Ema lo tekabel. That perhaps, since a woman is not obligated to observe the mitzvah of Arba Minim, under those circumstances, she should not indeed accept the lulav, and the husband should be the one to put it directly into the water. Why? Well, why? Well, why shouldn't she accept it? We'll see in a minute. Kamash Milan. Therefore, the Mishnah informs us that indeed there is an added chidush. Not only can hubby put it directly into the vase, but his wife, who is not chayiv in the mitzvah of lulav, can also put it into the vase. So take a look at Rashi in the Gemara, not in the Mishnah, in the Gemara. Amalo. Now, why would I think that she cannot, despite the fact, well, just because she's not chayav, why can't she handle the lulav? Says Rashi, Amalo, dilegaba ika iser tiltum. Because in relationship to somebody who is not chayav in the mitzvah of lulav, how do we possibly look at the lulav on Shabbos? It's a branch, piece of wood. And on the ordinary circumstances, pieces of wood are muktzah on Shabbos. The only reason why this piece of wood is not muktzah is based on the fact that there is a mitzvah. So I could have imagined, since women are not obligated to observe this mitzvah, perhaps in relationship to themselves, the lulav maintains its characteristic as a piece of wood, and indeed would be muktzah. Kamash Milan, says the Gemara. What's the Gemara now going to say? Don't look at Rashi. Tell me, how would you write the next words? Kamash Milan, what's the chiddush? What's the chiddush? It's not muktzah. But Rashi's not going to say that. Take a look at Rashi. Kamash Milan, the cave under ra'ui l'netilas anashim, since this lulav is suitable for what? For a man who is obligated to observe the mitzvah of lulav, toras kli alav, umutar betiltul lakov. That in theory, for this woman, it should remain muktzah. It would remain muktzah. Why is it that it does not remain muktzah? Because there is no such thing that if an object is permissible for person number one, that it should not be permissible for person number two. Since we know that in relationship to the man who is chayav in the mitzvah of lulav, it undoubtedly is not a piece of wood. What does Rashi say it is? It's a kli, a utensil. We have a general rule of pinky that it is impossible for a kli to be mutar for person A and to be prohibited unto person B. Therefore, that's the chidush of the Gemara. The chidush is not that it's not muktzah in effect for the woman. In theory, it should be muktzah for the woman. It should be muktzah for the woman. Because she's not chayeves in the mitzvah of lulav. But since a man can be yotzei with this lulav, therefore it has a toiras kli. It has a din of a kli. And once it has a din of a kli, automatically it is permissible not only to the person who can use this kli, but also for an individual who cannot use this particular kli. So Rashi here seems to be disagreeing with his grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, who is the Marad Shmaitza, who claims that women, despite the fact they're not obligated to observe the mitzvah, any mitzvah sasishas man grama, certainly are permitted to do so, and are entitled to make a bracha, as is the Ashkenazic practice. Now, if a woman could fulfill the mitzvah, despite the fact that she is not chayeves, then Rashi doesn't need his whole long song and dance, that you know what? You know why the lulav is not muktzah? Because the husband can use it. You know why it's not muktzah? Because she can use it. So Rashi apparently does not believe that a woman who is chayav, who is not chayav in the mitzvah of lulav, because it's a mitzvah sasishas man grama, maybe she should not be taking arba mina. Maybe she should not be taking arba mina. And in fact, Rashi in Rosh Hashanah goes even one step beyond that. Take the sheet that I distributed. You have Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, and I bracketed the words of the Gemara upon which the Mishnah comments. The Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah, Ein ma'akfin es hatinokos milis koa. That on Rosh Hashanah, if you want to get a headache, surefire thing is let your kids blow shofar. That's all. Says the Mishnah, Ein ma'akvin es hatinokos milis koa. You don't prevent a child who wants to just bump around with the shofar, play around with it, he can blow all he wants. No problem whatsoever. In first the Gemara, Hanashim ma'akvin. Apparently, only a child, we will tell that child that you can blow shofar. But a woman, perhaps, we will tell that woman, you must not handle the shofar. You must not handle the shofar. So that's the inference from the Gemara. Ask the Gemara, the Hotanya we learned in a Braisa, Ein ma'akvin lois hanashim, the lowest hatinokos. The Brisa says that you do not preclude neither a child nor a man nor a woman from handling the shofar and blowing it. Now, why would we allow a kid to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Why should we not prevent a child from blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Why don't we tell him, "Hey, stop blowing"? Why? That's exactly what Rashi says. There is a mitzvah of chinuch to me to teach how to blow a shofar. Because primarily the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, right? Assuming that the mitzvah is not to hear it, that's a whole machlokes, whether it's to hear it or blow it, but whatever it is, there's a mitzvah chinuch. So therefore the assumption is there's absolutely no reason under the sun to preclude a child from blowing, but a woman is not chayever. The second braisa says we allow women to blow shofar on Yom Tov also. Amar Abaye loy kasha. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Ha Rabbi Yosef, Reb Shimon. One brisa is formulated according to Rabbi Yehuda, the other brisa is formulated according to Rabbi Yosef and Reb Shimon. The son you learned in a brisa, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, Drash, Bnei Yisrael somchin, V'ein Bnos Yisrael somchot. Then, must make smicha on an animal. The Torah says that when you bring a korban, v'samach yado al rosh ha'olah, supposed to lean on the animal. Fine. So the first opinion is that men make smicha because we darshan the phrase b'nei Yisrael, even though the word b'nei Yisrael 2,000 other times in the Chumash is translated as children and refers to men and women. In this particular situation, there was some tradition that they had that it's to be interpreted as the sons of Israel. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, women should not make smicha. Should not make smicha. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Omerim, Nashim Somchos Rishus. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon says it's okay. They can't. They may not be obligated to do so, but if they so desire, they're perfectly permitted to do so. So now, take a look at Rashi. I bracketed the Rashi for you. In the inference of the Gemara on the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says, "Ein me'akvin esatinokos milis koa," where we do not prevent a child, the inference is Hanashim Ma'akvin. We do prevent a woman from blowing shofar. Take a look at Rashi. Dipturos legamre. Women are totally exempt from mitzvahs asay. Why? The mitzvahs asay shehazman gramahu. Vechitaki, if they should blow on Rosh Hashanah, iko bal toisef. Not only are they not fulfilling anything by blowing, says Rashi, they violate a law of the Torah. Lo tosifu al hadavar asher yagidu l'chol yamin u'smol. The way Rashi interprets is that if You have a mitzvah which you're not obligated to observe. In effect, you're creating an additional mitzvah onto you. So just as for the men in the room, if we were to add onto number 613, that would violate the law of Baal Taisif. If we should suddenly say there are 614 mitzvos, that would be Baal Taisif. Here too, a woman is obligated to observe about 591 mitzvahs. There are about 20 mitzvahs, I say, which women are exempt. Maybe even fewer than that. But there are maybe 20. So they're chayiv in 591. Well, if they observe number 592, that is Baal Taisif, at least according to Rashi. Ika Baal Taisif. It is somewhat shocking that Rashi should make such a statement, because on two occasions, not because Rashi's daughters wore tefillin, that's not what I had in mind, because on two occasions in the Chumash, where the mitzvah of Baal Taisif is discussed, in Dvarim chapter 4, at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshanan, as well as Dvarim chapter 13, verse 1, where the Torah writes, Lo tosifu al adar velo sigra mimenu, in both instances, Rashi communicates his definition of Baal Taisif by providing illustrations of how you violate Baal Taisif. And in both cases, he doesn't quote the same illustrations all the time, but they all share a common denominator. This is Rashi's illustration. Do not put five tzitzis on a garment. Do not put five parshiot in tefillin. Do not take a fifth min. Do not add a fourth bracha for Birchas Kahanim. So if those are the illustrations, define for me the definition of Baal Taisif according to Rashi and Chumash. What's the definition? Any mitzvah where there is a defined number, you're not allowed to add to that the number. Or you can't detract. So if the mitzvah says you have to have arba kanfos, so you need four. Can't put five, you can't put three. If the Torah says you're supposed to put four parshios in the tefillin, can't put five, can't put three. So nowhere does Rashi ever cite as an illustration that Baal Taisif is violated when you add a mitzvah which the Torah never legislated. It doesn't appear. And it would appear from Rashi and Chumash that if a man, Moshe Rabbeinu, came down and said, right now, today, Moshe Rabbeinu pops up and says, there's mitzvah number 614. I forgot to tell it to you before I died. So Moshe Rabbeinu would be guilty of violating Baal Taisif. Because nobody has Moshe Rabbeinu would not violate Baal Taisif. Because that's not the definition of Baal Taisif according to Rashi. So it is a little strange that Rashi here in the Gemara, of all places, would say that a woman who is chayevet in 591 suddenly is going to violate Baal Taisif by doing a mitzvah asei shazman grama, when Rashi himself never said that if I add mitzvah 614, I would violate Baal Taisif. It's a little unusual. But nonetheless, Rashi does say that. And in that lengthy Taisus, which we're not going to look at, but in that lengthy Taisus, B'dibur HaMaskel, Ha Rabbi Yehuda V'Rabbi Yossi, that is where the Rabbeinu Tam goes to town into proving that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. And that, you're right, there is no obligation to observe a mitzvah sensatious man grama, but women are allowed to do so. And if they're allowed to do so, I, Rabbeinu Tam, now say that they're also entitled to make a bracha. To make a bracha. And even Mechaber and Rambam, who claim that a woman is not permitted to make a berachas ha-mitzvah because she can't say the word vitzivanu, which they interpret as a personal obligation, neither of them say that a woman's not allowed to observe a mitzvah. None of them say that. And in fact, Ovadia Yosef writes for Edot HaMizrach people that if a woman should blow shofar, she should not say the Berachas HaMitzvah, but she should make a Shechianu. If she blows for herself, why not? It's a mitzvah that she's observing from time to time. She can't say Vitzivanu, but there is a mitzvah. And therefore, same thing. First day of Lulav, a woman in Sephardic tradition does not say a bracha. So she would not say Al Netilas Lulav on the first day of Sukkot. But he would say Shechianu, because it's the first time that she has an opportunity to observe this mitzvah. And the Rabbeinu Tam spends lots of time, ink space, trying to prove that women historically all many a times did. He does not quote his mother. He does not know Rashi, right? He does not quote his mother. He quotes Michal Bas Shaul, where the Gemara says the daughters of Shaul were tefillin. So instead of quoting a practice of his mother, I'm going to quote you Gemara. It says the Michal wore tefillin. No, Michal wore tefillin. Every other woman can wear tefillin as well. That's Rashi says. That's what Rashi says. In fact, commenting on this, the Or Zarua, and there is Or Zarua in Masechah Sukkah, and he writes in his halachas, nearly it appears to me that in this machloikis in Rosh Hashanah, whether the halach is like Rabbi Yossi or like Rabbi Yehuda, nearly the halacha is Rabbi Yehuda. And how does he know that? Because our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, and the way Rashi explains it, what is it? Why is it that that the Mishnah tells us that a woman can handle the lulav? What's the chiddush? Apparently, the Gemara believes, as our Gemara said, that the women are not chayiv, not chayiv, and that maybe they should not be able to handle the lulav. And how did Rashi explain why they are allowed to handle the lulav? Because if it's a kli for the hubby, it can't be mutzah for the man. For the woman. If it's a kli for the man, it can't be a mutzah for the woman. But that all indicates that the woman's not being mekayim the mitzvah of Arba Minah. Because if she were, she'd be able to handle it on her own right, not because the husband is allowed to move it. So therefore, the Or Zarua cites our Gemara and Rashi to prove that the Rabbeinu Tam is wrong. That the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. That women should not engage in the mitzvah of smicha, nor should they engage in the mitzvah asay shehazman grama. Shehazman grama. Yeah? Yeah. That's issue number one. Issue number two is that this issue, this principle which Rashi establishes is not agreed upon by all. Namely, that if something is not muktzah for the man, automatically it is not muktzah for the woman, may not be agreed upon by all. There is a Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Mem Zayin Omid Aleph. Here is the case. It's talking about garments which an ani wears, all ripped to shreds, our pants with 20 holes in it, and so on and so forth. Says the Mishnah, Big day aniyim la'aniyim. Garments that are suitable for a poverty-stricken person can be worn by aniyim. Big day ashirim la'ashirim. Garments reserved for the wealthy class, for the upper class, should be worn on Shabbos by the wealthy class, by the upper class. Avolo big day aniyim la'ashirim. But an ashir is not permitted to wear on Shabbos tattered clothes. Why? Why? Because it doesn't have a lach of a beged. This ashir does not look at this as a garment. What does he look at it as? It is a shmata. He would throw it in the garbage, use it as shmata. That's what he would use it for. He would never wear it. So if he never wears it, says the Gemara, it would forfeit its status. Asks Taisvis. How about our Gemara? Our Gemara says, and he agrees with Rashi, that the lulav is what? Is muktzah, is not muktzah for the woman. Why? Because it's roi for the man. Well, If the garment is ra'ui for what? A poor person. Yeah. By definition, it's got to be a garment. Otherwise, an ani wouldn't be able to wear it on Shabbos. So if it's defined as a garment for an ani, it should be defined as a garment for an usher as well. Answers Tosfos. Shezeh holech achar habayis. You're right, says Tosfos. If the usher is in the house by the ani, he happens to be there for Shabbos, he is allowed to wear the aniim's garments. Because in this house, this item is called a garment. Once it's called a garment in this house, makes no difference if you, the ani, are wearing it, or you're a multi-millionaire. It's a garment in this house, it can't be considered a non-garment for somebody else in the same house. But if this same person, this rich guy, were to have it in his house, how would he view this particular pair of pants? Like a shmata. He would never wear it. Therefore, it forfeits its shame beget, not in his house. Here too, says Tosfos, since the wife and the husband live in the same house, therefore, once the item has been established with the halacha of a kli for the husband, under those circumstances, it now will have the halacha of a kli for her as well. But the conclusion of Tosfos would be that if the wife happens to live alone and she is not she wants to use her own lulav, maybe on Chol HaMoed, not on Shabbos, that item might remain muktzah to you on Shabbos. Might remain muktzah. Tosfos considers that possibility. Tosfos considers that possibility. Yeah. Yeah. Please turn to Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis for a minute. We'll see another statement of Tosfos related to this issue, and an interesting Vilna Gaon. The last Tosfos on the page, Tultul Ba'alma. This is a preview of the beginning of the next parak. The Gemara had said, the Mishnah says, that Lulav Ve'arava Shisha Ve'shiva. That lulav sometimes is observed 6 days of the Yom Tov of Sukkos, sometimes it's observed 7 days of the Yom Tov of Sukkos. How is it observed 7 days if the first day of Yom Tov comes out on Shabbos? So since the first day of Yom Tov is the Oraisa, the rabbis did not preclude us from what? From observing the mitzvah of lulav on the first day of Yom Tov. In that case, lulav would be observed for 7 days. But if first day of Yom Tov is a Thursday, so Thursday is Yom Tov, no problem. Now the third day of Chol HaMoed, the second day of Chol HaMoed, third day of Sukkot is Shabbos. The mitzvah of Arba Minim after the first day, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, is only Midrabbanan. So therefore, in those years, you would only take lulav shisha, not shiva. And the mitzvah midrabbanan to take lulav zeicha lemikdash would not override the Shabbos. Ask the Gemara why. What isur would you violate on the third day of Chol HaMoed by picking up a lulav? What's the isur malacha you're going to violate? What's the isur malacha of picking up a lulav in your house? What malacha are you going to violate? Nothing. What is it? Tiltul ba'alma. It's moving a piece of wood. But if there is a mitzvah, it's not a piece of wood. So why did the rabbis legislate that if the third day of Chol HaMoed is a Shabbos, you can't be mekayim the mitzvah of lulav that year? And there are some years, a majority of years, when you would only take lulav 6 days and not seven. Why? Amai, tiltul ba'amu, v'litchei Shabbos. Let it override the Shabbos. So that's when the Gemara introduces Rabba's Gzeira. says Gzeira Shemi Yavirenu Dalas Mishus Harab. Why is it that you're now allowed to take a lulav on Shabbos? Midoraisa, of course you can. But we're afraid that if you're not going to know how to be Mekayim the Mitzvah, you're going to pick it up, carry it to a Chacham, to teach you how to hold the lulav, which side to put the Hadassim in, which side to put the Aravos in, which way to hold it, and so on and so forth. So they thought you were going to be Mechal Shabbos. Therefore, Gzeira the Rabba suspended the Mitzvah of lulav. That's the reason why we don't blow Shofar, and that's the reason we don't blow read the Megillah. Should Megillah come out on Shabbos? In our calendar, it's impossible. Yudalid of Adar never comes out on Shabbos. But in Yerushalayim, where they observe Shushan Purim, many a times Shushan Purim is on Shabbos. They do not read the Megillah on Shabbos. They read it on Friday, same day as we do. Same reason, Gzeira de Rabba. So now take a look at Tosfos. Tiltul ba'almahu. Asks Tosfos a fundamental question. If you're saying that the piece of wood is tiltul, what are you claiming? What's the issue here? What's the issue? That it's muktzah. Well, muktzah is only mit rabbanan. Why should it override what? Anisa da'oraisa. That's the Gemara's question. Tiltul ba'alma means it doesn't just that it's moving. You're moving it. You're moving it, and at best you violate anisa muktzah. Ask Tosfos, what do you mean it's muktzah? It's not anything. Why does the Gemara tiltul ba'alma? It's not even muktzah. Why isn't it muktzah? Because I'm using it for what? For a mitzvah. Says Tosfos the following chiddush. Afal gav de chazi le mitzvah. Even though this lulav is suitable for what? For a mitzvah. Shaykh bei isur muktzah litaltul mi'achar de'ein asui kli. Now that what? A lulav is not defined as a utensil. Is not defined as a utensil. Therefore, in characteristically, definitionally, it is something that is subject to muktzah. Because the rose is a piece of wood. But when you have to handle it, for a mitzvah, we allow you to move the muktzah. But it is muktzah. Why is it muktzah? Because it does not have the status of a kli on it. That's exactly the opposite of what Rashi said by us. Rashi claimed that a woman is allowed to handle the lulav on Shabbos. Why? Because it is a kli for the husband. Tosfos claims that's not the case. That is simply not the case. That a lulav is not called a kli. If it's not called a kli, therefore, what is it? It's a shtickel holz. It's a piece of wood. A piece of wood, by definition, is muktzah. Therefore, the Gemara can ask the question, even though moving it on Yom Tov is only, on Shabbos is only an isa muktzah, but the mitzvah should override it. The mitzvah should override it. Override the isa muktzah. It's just the Gemara, Gzeira de Rabba. That's how Tosfos learns. But fundamentally, claims Tosfos, this lulav is indeed muktzah. This lulav is indeed muktzah. And this receives enormous support from the Yerushalmi. I should have focused that at the Yerushalmi's comment right here on our Mishnah. Says the Yerushalmi, the Netziv, in his commentary, Merome Sadeh, quotes this. Yerushalmi writes, Heinicho ba'aretz asur letaltalo. Once you put your lulav down, after you've already been mekayim the mitzvah, you are not allowed to move it, even on Yom Tov. The concept of muktzah applies on Yom Tov too, not just on Shabbos. So once you are Mekayim the mitzvah, says the Yerushalmi, I put it down, I'm allowed to move. You're not allowed to move it along any longer. So says the Yerushalmi. And Lehalacha, the Shibalei Haleket, and other Chachmei Ashkenaz quoted this Lehalacha, that on the first day of Sukkot, Once you finish the mitzvah and you put it down, as long as you're holding it, you're ready. You're still making the mitzvah. But after davening, you're finished with it. After Hoshanas, right? And now you put it down. In theory, you should not be able to take it home. You'd have to leave it in shul. Why? Because it's muktzah. Muktzah. And in fact, Amar Rab Avin in Yerushalmi, Asr Bahaniyah. Not only are you now allowed to be metaltel it, it's Asr Bahana as well. And so Paskins Toshibale Haleket. However, he quotes his brother, Rabbeinu Binyamin, who asked him the following question. What are you talking about? Brother, what are you talking about? There is a Gemara which we learned. Please open up to Daf Lamed Vav. No, it's not Lamed Vav. Let's say Esrog Mutol HaRiach Bay. You're allowed to smell an Esrog. Where's that Gemara? There's Lamed Vav. But you're now allowed to smell a Hadas. Lamed Zayin. Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. About 10 lines from the top. Amar Rabba, Hadas shel mitzvah, asu lahariach bo. The hadas that you use for your mitzvah, you are not permitted to smell it on Yom Tov. Esrog shel mitzvah, mutu lahariach bo. But in Esrog, you are permitted to move on Yom Tov. To smell. My timer. Hadas dilarecha ka'i. Hadas, which is set aside, its primary use is that for smell. Ki ka'aktsia, when you are maktsa it le mitzvah, when you set aside for a mitzvah, merecha aktsia. It's been set aside for your own personal, for non-personal use. Since the primary use of a hadas is to smell, therefore when you set aside from a mitzvah, you are not permitted to derive personal pleasure from smelling. But esrog, which is a fruit, the la'achilokoi, whose primary use is what? To be eaten. Ki aktsia, when you set it aside for a mitzvah, me'achila aktsia, you set it aside not to be eaten. But smelling is a residual, is a secondary benefit, and it's not included in huktzah l'mitzvasa. So says the Gemara. So what question is the Rabbeinu Binyamin going to ask on his brother? What question is the Rabbeinu Binyamin going to ask on this? What question? The Gemara doesn't seem to say it's asur in bahana. The Gemara says it's huktzah l'mitzvasa. So whatever its primary use is, it can't be used for that primary use, for personal use. So the primary use of a hadas is to smell. You can't smell. Primary use of an esrog is to eat. What's the primary use of a lulav? What do you use a lulav? The Gemara used it before. As a sweep the floors. So you can't use it as a broom. Okay, can't use it as a broom. But obviously it's not muktzah. In which point that you can't move it. Because if you couldn't move it, there wouldn't be any difference, any discussion between this and that. You don't have to give any reasons why you're not allowed to move the hadas. Because it's what? Because it's set aside for smell. And if it wasn't set aside for smell, you can't use it either. Because it's muktzah, you can't move. Therefore, claims the Rabbeinu Binyamin, this whole business that the Arba Minim should be subject to the laws of Muktzah, which mean you can't move them, is Loihaya Dvarim Me'aylam. Doesn't exist. The only type of Haktza'ah that does apply is that once it's been set aside for the mitzvah, you can't derive personal benefit from it. But not that you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos and Yontif. And he paskins against the Yerushalmi. Against the Yerushalmi. If you look at the Rama,
in the first case, back on Lamed Zion, so that's talking about any day of Yontif.
That is correct.
But here now, when we're talking Muksa, we're only talking about the Shabbos?
No, that's why I quoted the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says
on any day.
Once you finish being Mekayim the Mitzvah, you put it down, you're not allowed to move it. That's correct. Not just Shabbos. Because it's essentially a piece of wood. A piece of wood is Muksa. Only you're allowed to move it, Letzarech Mitzvah, nothing beyond that. Others say that, no, you're right. An esrog which can be eaten is a fruit, therefore you can move it. But the lulav, the hadas, and the arava, you can't move because they're a piece of wood. And they accept it. They said this Kumara's question is doesn't really challenge my premise. And they'll say the only exception to the rule happens to be the esrog and not the arba minim. So say many rishonim. Many rishonim. Now, this idea, which Tosfos said that that something which is set aside for a mitzvah can be muktzah, and that after you're finished with it, it's really muktzah and you can't be moved, happens to be supported by the Gaon as well, in a totally different case. Please take the reverse sheet, the second side of the page. The case here is talking about on Shabbos, about a moel's knife. Tell me why, Rabotai, a moel's knife is muktzah on Shabbos. Tell me why. It's a knife. Tell me why a moel's knife is muktzah on Shabbos. Correct. Muktzah, nachmas, chisoron kiss. Chisoron kiss means that if you have a high precision instrument, I happen to mention it in the Rambam Shir Shabbos, if you have a high precision instrument, which is normally used for a special occasion only, and you are typically reluctant to use it in the non-professional use, that item becomes muktzah by virtue of the fact that you would not use it because of potential loss. Chisaron kis, potential financial loss. So the classic example is the chalaf, the shochet knife. A shochet knife has to be very, very sharp. You check it, abisra v'atufra. You run it on your nail, on your tongue, and on your nail. Abisra, very soft skin, your nail, your tongue, and atufra on your nail, something hard and something very soft. That's why I always said, Shaykhim never talk. They never talk anymore. Because they've tested it too frequently on their tongue, and that's what happened, they never talk. So now, you have the situation, the Shaykh is sitting in his house, and his wife brings a roast beef, and she lost all the cutting knives. And she says, Berula, can I please have your shochet knife so I can cut the meat for our guests? The halach is, you're not allowed to use that knife to cut the meat. Why? Because under ordinary circumstances, a shochet does not take out his chalaf to cut up a piece of meat. He's afraid there'll be a bone, whatever it is, and he doesn't want to ruin it. An izmal is the name of the utensil, the knife that a male uses for meal. And as a result, it's also a precision tool instrument. And typically, Mayalim don't use their Ismail to peel an apple on Shabbos. They don't. So it's Muktzah, Nachmas, Chisaron Kis. So now we're going to see a debate between the Ramah. You have a bris on Shabbos, and the Mayal's finished with the bris milah. What does he got to do with the knife? Can he take it and put it in his bag and carry it home? Or does he have to leave it there right on the floor? Says the Rama. I bracketed the Rama. Says the Rama, Umutar litautel ha'izmel la'achar mila. Says the Ramah, you are permitted to move the izmel even after the mila has been performed. Lahatsnio bechatzer ha'me'urav. To what? To put it away in a courtyard or in somebody's house so that the little kids don't play with it. You're allowed to put it away for safe purposes. Afal gav de'enot sarich lo od ba'oso Shabbos. Even though I have no further use for this knife, I am not going to do another bris mila on Shabbos. Why? The halo huktza ben hashmashos. Because when Friday night began, this knife was not mukta. Why was this knife not mukta this Shabbos? Because there was a bris scheduled. So it couldn't have been mukta machmas chisar and kiss, because there is a bris. Me'achar dohayat soruch lo ba'osa Shabbos. Kain nirali. So it appears to me. And in the brackets it says that this is delo ki maharil. This is against the maharil who wrote explicitly that the mail, when he's finished, puts it down on the side and that's it. He doesn't move it again till after Shabbos. So you take a look at the Goin. I bracketed it on below the Biragra. So he writes in line, the second line, Avol Maharil Kosav Demiyad Achar Hamila Yisro Koizmil Miyado. Right after what? He's finished with the meal, just chuck it on the side. Don't even put it, just chuck it down. Throw it down. Vidarke Moshe and the Ramah Kosav Shinirilo Divrei Riv. He likes the opinion of the Riv, who said that it was mutter. I don't know who exactly the Riv is. I forgot to check who it is. Who he's quoting. V'ishtamitu divrei tosefta v'yerushalmi mefurish k'divrei maril. And apparently they all, the Ramah, the Riv, everybody forgot. A black on white tosefta and a Yerushalmi. Which Yerushalmi is he referring to? Ours. What does the Yerushalmi say after you finish being Mekayim, the mitzvah of lulav? You put it down, now I'm going to move it. Now I'm going to move it. Why? Because it's mukta. Despite the fact that I did a mitzvah with it. It turns mukta as soon as the lulav has been finished. Now that same argument, could it have been mukta the Erev Yontiv? No. Can't be Mukta Erev Yontov. Why can't it be Mukta Erev Yontov? Because you need it on Yontov. And normally we have the golden rule by Mukta. Golden rule. Migu de iskatsoi lebein hashmashos. If something is Mukta bein hashmashos, it remains Mukta the entire day. But this was not Mukta lebein hashmashos. And the question now becomes a different halachic issue. It's called Yesh Mukta Lechatzi Shabbos O Ein Mukta Lechatzi Shabbos. Is it possible that if something was not Mukta at the moment Yom Tov or Shabbos began, and now in the middle of Shabbos and Yom Tov comes a reason for us to make it Mukta? So there's a Machlokes. The Gaon claims, and the Maril, that the Yerushalmi ruled accordingly Yesh Mukta Lechatzi Shabbos. You can have mukta even in the middle of the Shabbos, as long as you don't need it any longer. And the Gaon happens to agree with this. That's what he writes. And look at the next line. The Risham Tosefta the Sukkah. Yom Tov Arishin Shachag Shkalis B'Shabbos Kevin Shiyotzi Yidei Chavoso Asur L'Taltalo Ubi Yerushalmi Sof Perek Gimel Shav. So therefore, the Gaon disagrees with the Ramah and says that Amayil, Pinky Katzenstein, next time he comes on Shabbos, which he never does, he has to go ahead and what? And as soon as he's finished, he's got to put the knife down and not move it any further. Why? Because it becomes mukza once again. Machmas chisaron kis, after the mitzvah has already been performed. So you should be aware of this. Machloikis achroinim. If something was mukza before Shabbos, excuse me, not mukza, before Shabbos or before Yom Tov, and now the use of that particular mitzvah item is no longer needed, would its essential core mukza kick in? By lulav, it's a piece of wood, so it's called mukza machmas atzmo. You have no use for a piece of wood on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, no use for it. And by the izmel, it's mukza machmas chi saron kis. So that's the machloikis, the guin, and here as well. Yeah.
Is it mentioned by shofar also or not?
What is that?
Is an argument mentioned by shofar or not?
I didn't see it by shofar, but there is no reason why it wouldn't apply to shofar.
Well, with shofar, you can say you can have it to somebody else later on.
If you would be, correct. 100%. The same thing can be true by a lulav. I can be makne to him, and he can be yotzei it also. But whenever it's finished, if there's no potential use for it, it'll become mukzah. That's correct. That's correct. Yeah.
Is there a difference, Rabbi, putting it outside or putting it in his case?
That's a good question. No one seems to say, I didn't find anybody would say that if you were going to accept this mukzah, right, you can't put it down in the case. You can put it down in the case. That's like al-gabei karka. You just put it, it means once you put it away, you're not using it any longer for the mitzvah, it becomes mukzah. It becomes mukzah.
So that's even though the Bein HaKadosh wasn't mukzah.
That is correct. It was not. The Gra said it back on white. It was, and the Ramah said the same thing. It can't become mukzah because it was not mukzah Bein HaShemashos. So the Gra says, well, the Yerushalmi says it was. So it must be that the Ramah believes there is no such thing as a mukzah l'chatzi Shabbos. If something was not mukzah Bein HaShemashos, you can't suddenly impose that source of mukzah in the middle of the day. Unless, can't say no, it's no longer ra'uy. If you have a cup, tell me why a cup of yours is not mukzah on Shabbos. Because it's a kli. A kli, by definition, can't be mukzah. Fine. What happens if it smashes? It's not a kli anymore. It's shviras kelim. So then it does become mukzah. Why? Because it's not a kli. But the point is, if it had something to avoid the mukzah, because it was a kli, it was a chafzah shel mitzvah, that's where the Gaon says it can, and the Ramah says no, that's impossible.
So according to the Ramah, after a bris, you can use the izmel for anything.
That is correct. According to the Ramah, you can now use it for anything.
I mean, according to the Gaon and the Maril, you can't have a katan.
No. The mitzvah of chinuch applies.
Why?
Because there's a mitzvah of chinuch. That's the next part of the Mishnah. Part of your father's obligation is to be mechanech your child.
But if he knows where to use it.
Good, and if he doesn't, you can't. That is correct. If you have a 3-year-old kid who doesn't understand what the nanuim are all about, the lulav remains mukzah. That is correct. If your wife already was, you know, and all the, yes, it remains mukzah according to the Maril and the Goan. Yeah.
If you have a kli that's like, you don't ordinarily use it, it's just for show, and you know, you're afraid of it being broken, can a mukzah machmas chisaron kis apply to that? There was something.
Sure.
You said, but even though it's called a kli.
The chalaf is a kli. Right? The Sheikhet's knife is a kli. But a chisaron kis even applies to, I'm talking about a regular kli. Right, a regular kli can't be mukzah. But that is, chisaron kis could be a regular kli, 100%. The ismil is a kli, the Sheikhet's knife is a kli, and nonetheless, it becomes mukzah. Yeah. Now the Rambam, when he formulates this Mishnah's halacha, the opening line, Perek Zayin halacha chafei, writes carefully, Mikabeles Isha Miyad Bala Bishabas Bisman Shahyu Notlin Esamlulov Bishabas. Bisman Shahyu Notlin Esamlulov Bishabas. Apparently, according to the Rambam, Bismanenu, when we do not take Arba Minim on Shabbos, the Lulav is Muktzah. The Lulav is Muktzah. Why? Because essentially there is absolutely no use for it. And that's a position which, you know, you can disagree, but that the Rambam's position is clear. If there is no mitzvah on that particular day, under those circumstances, starting with Bein HaShemashos, that particular lulav remains muktzah because you have absolutely no use for it whatsoever. No use for it whatsoever. Yeah. Okay, now let's see the second issue. Second issue of the Mishnah deals with adding, putting it back into the water, adding water, and changing water. So let's take a look at Rashi, how Rashi defines it. Rashi in the Mishnah now. Machzirin l'mayim. It's the first line of the Rashi in the Mishnah, the end of the line. Machzirin l'mayim. Why should you put it back on water? Shelo yichmosh, that it shouldn't dry out. Then it becomes all horribly looking. Bishabbos machzirin. Shaharei mikan notlum hayom. You took it out of that vase in Shabbos morning. Therefore you're allowed to return it. Avolo mosifin mayim, but you are not permitted to add water to the vase on Shabbos. Koshkein she'ein machlifin mayim lishpoches elu veloseis acherim tzonan mehani. You are not permitted to pour it out and pour in cold water. You cannot do so, says Rashi. Why? Ditorach litakune mana. Ditorach litakune mana. Rashi's a little confusing here. Once the word tircha is set into motion, torach, you think it's what? It's just not a necessary activity. Certain forms of work, even though it constitutes no malacha, tircha is asur on Shabbos. Not to do things that you don't need to do, that exert a lot of energy. This doesn't seem to exert a lot of energy. So if I were to ask you to take all the tables and schlep them upstairs, Asa mid the Rabbanon to do so. Unless it's for Tzarech Mitzvah. But just because I want them out of this room, not because I need them upstairs for a mitzvah, that's Tircha on Shabbos. You're not supposed to engage in Tircha on your Shabbos. This doesn't seem to me like a heck of a lot of Tircha. Taking out, adding a little water, that's a big Tircha. That's what it is. So Rashi writes, Litakune Mana. What does Tikkun Mana mean? What does Tikkun Mana? Repairing it, fixing it. Now, if you're fixing it by putting it in and keeping it fresh and in effect restoring its use as a fixing it, then the gradations in the Mishnah are very difficult to understand. Either you would say what? Putting it into water, adding a little water, changing the water is mutter. Because you're not really improving, you're not completing the product by putting it in. And if it is prohibited, if it does somehow add to the freshness and so on and so forth, then I shouldn't allow you to even put it back into the same vessel. So Rashi doesn't really explain to us wherein lies the distinction. If you identify tikkun mana, that I'm repairing the item, making the item better than it was 5 minutes ago, then I should be consistent. Either claim you're never allowed to put anything back into the vase, or claim that you're always allowed to put it in the vase, regardless as to whether you add water or change the water. This little compromise that you're allowed to put it in, and on Yom Tov you can add water, and now, well, what's the difference? In the tikkun mana of that particular item, I don't really have a good handle on what Rashi, how Rashi's explanation fits the criteria in the Mishnah. I don't have a good handle how it fits. Because logic would dictate it's mamanavshach. Either it's all mutter or it's all aser. All mutter or all aser. But one thing everybody agrees, that if something, a flower, has been cut from the ground, putting it into a vase on Shabbos per se cannot be responsible for what? For growing any longer. There's no such thing as zoreya, adding it grow. That is never an issue whatsoever on Shabbos. That cannot be the issue. And basically a vase where you have flowers, cut flowers, can be moved on Shabbos for that particular reason, because it's, you know, it's not really a muktzah. Because your flower...
Put it in water?
What? In theory, you're allowed to. In theory. Rashi will say you shouldn't do so on Shabbos, but in theory you're allowed to do it based on the fact that there's no malacha. What's the malacha?
So maybe that's the same thing with adding water, because you're actually doing something before the water was there already, and you're just putting it back to the state that you're not changing.
So why can't you?
You say, so maybe that's the difference between not adding water and adding water. Because with adding water, you're actually doing some kind of activity to...
Can you define what it is? If you can tell me how the flower stays better with new water, a little more. If I added a little more, now it's going to really fit.
Water, in the first case, the water was there already from the lula.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So Rashi used the word, it's so a little colder. Cold water is going to keep it fresher as opposed to warm water? I don't quite understand.
Is there any problem with leaves falling off by tiltil now?
No. No. No one has ever said that. That you shouldn't handle the aravos.
No, I'm talking about the cut flowers now on Shabbos.
No, I haven't seen that.
But
yeah.
You put that back in the refrigerator, or not? I guess
it doesn't say you can't.
Or Rashi couldn't, probably.
Yeah, maybe Rashi. Right, that's another issue which you have to explore. Is it only putting it into the water which is the issue, or any protective thing? Does it mean you can't put it back into the plastic bag? What does that mean? Right, so you can put it, if it was in the refrigerator, you can put it in the refrigerator. Yeah. Yeah. All right, we'll stop here, and then we'll continue next of all with the lengthy katan issue. Katan issue. Hold on a second, I need one second.